leader.
Ora, ora.
Hello, I'm Hanea Ahu, bringing you the Week in Parliament with Tom Frewen and Rhys Lyon. MPs gathered in the debating chamber at 2 on Tuesday for question time.
Question number 11, the Right Honourable Winston Peters. Order, order. The Right Honourable Winston Peters, question number 11.
Boo.
Question number 11, like many others during the week, was about Northland, with Mr. Peters asking the Prime Minister, John Key, for details of national spending promises during the campaign.
If, as he said, the government would unveil these promises after the by-election, will he now categorise precisely what these promises are, now that the by-election, thank heavens, is over?
Right, Honourable Mr. Speaker, the member should know Northland well enough to know what the priorities that the government is going to announce, huh?
There were also questions arising from the by-election campaign for the Prime Minister from the Leader of the Opposition, Labour's Andrew Little.
Is he aware that it's not only Northland that's seen its road funding slashed under National? In fact, Northland, Gisborne, Hawke's Bay, Taranaki and State Highway 3, Manawatu, Whanganui, Marlborough, Nelson, Tasman and the West Coast now get a total of $100 million a year less to maintain and improve their roads than they did when this government came to power.
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, that's quite incorrect. The only thing that got eroded was the Labor Party's vote in Northland that fell by two-thirds, the first outing under Andrew Little, and he got done.
Mr. Key got even more personal in response to another question from Andrew Little the next day.
Does he stand by his statement that, quotes, falling off a high horse in Northland can force ACC levies up, end quote? If so, is that why the government has set work and earners levies above the levels recommended by ACC?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I say to the junior leader of the opposition,
order.
Yes and no.
Order. It's that sort of start to the question, to the answer, does not help the order of the South. Now, Andrew Little.
Grow up. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
It was on Wednesday when questions were followed by the general debate and more about the by-election from, among others, National List MP Joanne Hayes.
Let's talk about bribes, shall we? Let's talk about free student loans, eh? That was one of the biggest bribes of Labor, wasn't it? Oh, yeah. Now, let's talk again about New Zealand First bribes in the by-election. Let's talk about that port. How on earth is he going to deliver on a port? He's not going to be able to. 10 bridges, we're going to be able to deliver on 10 bridges. That's what we've put into our plan and that's what we're going to do because we are a government that delivers on our promise. We are a government. When we say we are committed to doing stuff, we do it.
Just along the national benches from Joanne Hayes, their MP for Rangitata, Joe Goodhue, acknowledged that the result contained a message for the government, but there was also another message in the campaign.
The people of Northland got a message from Labor as well. They got a message that they did not care enough to campaign hard for the seat. They had nothing to offer in the way of policies, so much so that they threw Willow Jean Prime under the bus.
National's Joe Goodhue in Wednesday's general debate, which was followed by the last Members' Day for at least a month. Most of it was taken up with second reading debates on two bills sponsored by National's Christchurch Central MP, Nikki Wagner. One was a private bill enabling the Trust Board running her city's arts centre to cope with the impact of the earthquakes. The second was a local bill fixing up mistakes made by the Christchurch City Council and setting rates in the decade up to last year. There was just time left on Wednesday to complete the committee stage of a members' bill from the New Zealand First Party's Deputy Leader Tracy Martin. For the government, a respectable tally for the week of six bills, one containing a range of amendments, closing loopholes and benefit payments, and five bills split out of the objectionable publications and indecency legislation bill. Now from the chamber to the committee rooms for this report from Rhys Lyon.
The Coroner's Amendment Bill, currently under consideration by the Justice and Electoral Committee, makes a number of changes to coronial procedures following a review of the Coroner's Act 2006. Making a submission on the bill was Dr. Simon Stables, a forensic pathologist for the National Forensic Pathology Service, who suggested pathologists could be more suitable than coroners as a point of contact for grieving families.
I work in Christchurch. The coroner on duty is 800 kilometres away in an office in Auckland. So
any conversation that has to go through the coroner then divorces family who may be sitting in the whānau room at our mortuary from the pathologist who's 15 metres round the corner. And we have cases where whānau are there with the tupapaku, I'm finished the autopsy, I can trot around the corner, sit on the floor of our whānau room, talk with the family about what we've found, what it means, what we're waiting for in terms of extra results, what the implications of that are. Then the family can take that with them when they go to the tangi the next day.
Dr. Stables did not welcome a proposed change to that process.
The way the change in the amendment is now read is that I'm not going to be allowed to do that. So any contact has to be at the family's request through the coroner who's 800 kilometres away, not with the medical specialist who actually saw the body, because coroners don't actually see the bodies. Coroners don't actually go into mortuaries. Mm. Pathologists do all that stuff. We're the medical specialists that actually play that role.
And Dr. Stables batted off criticism that pathologists weren't equipped to deal with grieving families.
In the past, some of the chief coroners on record are saying that pathologists shouldn't be talking to families because they're not capable of talking to people properly. We've got between us 60 years experience in medicine and we've done a lot of this stuff.
And Dr. Stables found some level of support in a later submission from Chief Coroner Justice Deborah Marshall.
We agree with the pathologists that they should be talking to the families and health professionals if that will assist them in their job. Complete agreement with that. Our difficulty is that sometimes we get disputes for families, we get people pretending to be family members when they're not, and our 24-hour centre can spend a lot of time trying to resolve those issues. So we're supportive of the pathologist talking to the family, but we'd like it to be through the coroner who could say, this is the representative, here's their contact details.
Later, Green Party Justice and Electoral Committee member David Clendon asked the Chief Coroner about the pathologist's point of view.
The pathologists who were here submitting this morning are quite strong on this point of being able to speak directly to families, and you obviously got some sympathy for that.
Yes.
But you'd also like to retain a level of oversight of that.
Yes.
I think one of the points they made was that this might be happening several hundred kilometres away from where there is a coroner on a Sunday afternoon when conceivably the office is not manned. So
run a 24-7 system.
Oh, yes.
I'm so on duty this Easter weekend and I'll be from 5 p.m. on Friday night till 8 a.m. Monday morning. I'm available.
Chief Coroner Justice Deborah Marshall with that submission on the Coroner's Amendment Bill on Thursday. That bill is due to be reported back from the committee by the 19th of August. And earlier in the week, on Wednesday, the Government Administration Committee looked at a petition calling for a complete ban on fireworks in New Zealand. Speaking to the committee on behalf of the New Zealand Fire Service was its National Advisor on Fire Risk Management, Todd O'Donoghue, who suggested what other alternatives there could be to an outright ban on fireworks.
Maybe there could be some legislation around the time of year that they can be used so that they're not an all-year thing. I guess the difficulty I have, though, is policing that becomes very difficult because we're talking about something that can be placed down somewhere and lit and you walk away from it. It's not like you're breaking into a building and leaving lots of evidence as to who was the person who actually lit the match that lit the firework that caused the damage, if you know what I mean. Like, it would really rely on people seeing, witnessing it and willing to testify and you know, that was the person that did it. But I guess that's one consideration. I struggle myself with how it would be policed and enforced.
Mr. O'Donoghue explained why he thought the enforcement of any new laws could be difficult.
Particularly if you have a group of people, to determine who was the actual offending person that inappropriately used the firework or lit it off when they weren't supposed to. If there was some form of enforcement, it would be a police responsibility. Obviously, they are the experts in the field of gathering evidence of crimes and unlawful activity. So, I mean, I guess that may be a question to pose to the police to get a better idea of what is enforceable to them.
New Zealand Fire Service National Advisor on Fire Risk Management, Todd O'Donoghue, speaking to the Government Administration Committee on Wednesday. All up, there were 15 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Now back in the chamber and looking to the future, here's the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, with his weekly business statement on Thursday.
Mr. Speaker, next week the House begins a three-week recess when the House resumes on the 28th of April. It's the Government's intention to begin the debate on the Appropriations 2013-14 Confirmation and Validation Bill, as well as a number of other second and third readings on the order paper.
Mr Brownlee then faced this question from his opposition shadow, Chris Hipkins.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Can I start by wishing all members of the House a very happy Easter break? Mr Speaker, I notice on the order paper that there are currently only 21 government orders of the day available on the order paper, and in fact there are 22 members' orders of the day available on the order paper. I wonder whether the Leader of the House has given any consideration to increasing the allocation of time to members' orders of the day, given the government seem to be having difficulty filling their half of the order paper.
The Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Well, Mr Speaker, the relative inexperience of the Shadow Leader of the House is showing through in that statement. He will know that this is a very busy government. They are big pieces of legislation that are before the House at the present time. And if I might quote a former Leader of the House when a similar question was posed to him about 2004, his reply then, sir, was, "Stand by, more is on its way."
But not in time to stop the House adjourning early for Easter, farewelled at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon by the Assistant Speaker, Lindsay Tish.
Members, in accordance with leave given yesterday, the House stands adjourned until 2 p.m. on Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2015. Enjoy the adjournment break. And good afternoon.
Another move by the government to get away early on Tuesday evening did not go as smoothly after the government's chief whip, caught out by unexpectedly rapid progress on the committee stages of bills, made this request to Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows, with half an hour to go before the scheduled adjournment time of 10 p.m.
Point of order, Tim McIndoe.
Mr Speaker, the committee has made excellent and indeed unexpectedly rapid progress through all of its business this afternoon and evening, as a result of which I wish to thank members and seek leave for the House to rise early.
Leave is sought for that purpose. Is there any objection?
There was, so they soldiered on, as did the Minister for Small Business, Craig Foss, who has had his fellow National backbenchers ask him questions on all but two sitting days in the past 4 weeks. On Wednesday, it was the turn of the National MP for Rangitike, Ian McKelvey.
How will small and medium businesses benefit from the government's proposals to simplify the tax system?
Mr Foss's answers eventually drew a protest from Labor's senior whip and shadow leader of the House, Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, over several days there have been questions from government members to this minister, in which he has answered them with a pre-prepared short speech. And while there are no rules that prevent ministers from reading answers, it does seem to be a waste of the House's time to get short speeches to petty questions.
Order. Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
The Leader of the House.
Mr Speaker, small business is the heart of the New Zealand economy. And I'm disgusted that the Labor Party should say it's a waste of the House's time to consider their interests.
Order. 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 Order.
The Speaker, David Carter, upheld the government's right to ask itself patsy questions.
Questions are allocated and the government gets a share of those questions. They have every right to ask a question about how will small and medium-sized businesses benefit by proposed tax changes.
Mr Carter allowed another question for the Minister for Small Business, but with a warning.
What reports has the Minister seen on proposed changes that will not simplify the tax system for small and medium businesses?
Order. On the basis that the answer does not comment on another political party's policy, the Minister can answer the supplementary question.
Mr Foss said he had seen two reports, one of which was critical of burdensome taxes.
But I've also seen a report from the same author that proposes complex new taxes and burdens on small businesses. Mr Speaker, the author of those two reports cannot have it both ways. Mr Speaker, the author of those reports is the Labor Party.
Order. Order.
That was enough for the Speaker.
We're going to take this opportunity of asking that Minister to look carefully at Speaker's ruling 1542A. And it is not reasonable to use a question from the governing party to simply attack other members of this House or other political parties. It is to cease from that Minister.
So is that the last patsy question for Craig Foss?
No, to my great surprise, Mr Foss was back the next day with yet another patsy. This time the National backbencher with the job of asking it was National's new MP for Taranaki King Country, Barbara Couriger.
Mr Speaker, my question is to the Minister for Small Business and asks, how are small businesses benefiting from the Better for Business Result 9 program?
Mr Speaker.
Honourable Craig Foss.
Mr Speaker, this week the government introduced the New Zealand Business Number Bill, a key part of the Better for Business Result 9 program.
This time, though, Craig Foss didn't test the Speaker's patience by trying to score points against Labor with his answer to a supplementary question. The Speaker's likely reaction, if he had tried it on, came after Mr Carter interrupted the Minister's answer to deal with an interjection.
Would you like me to start again, Mr Speaker?
No, I certainly would not like you to start again. I'd be very grateful if you'd finish the answer quickly.
Mr Speaker, small and medium businesses are benefiting from these initiatives.
Thanks, Tom. Now, Rhys, what were the hot topics in Question Times apart from Northland?
Two issues that were in the news last week also found their way into the Chamber. The first issue, milk prices, was raised in questions from Winston Peters.
This question is to the Minister for Primary Industries and asks, does the Minister believe 2012 amendments to the Dairy Industry Restructuring Act has achieved, and I use the quotes, a stable permanent capital base for the cooperative, secures our future, and will support progress with our strategy to grow volumes and value? End of quotes. If so, why?
Honourable Nathan Guy.
Mr Speaker, yes, the Dairy Industry Restructuring Amendment Act 2012 set out to ensure that the original Dairy Industry Restructuring Act was fit for purpose and that the contestability of milk supply provides incentives for the New Zealand dairy industry to reach its full potential. That said, we are legislatively required to review DERA. The review of the legislation will consider the state of competition in dairy markets in New Zealand and whether the pro-competition elements of DERA are still required. This process begins in June this year.
Supplementary question.
Supplementary question, right, Honourable Winston Peters.
Is the Minister concerned that a low milk price, instead of generating a higher dividend for farmers, which was the theory behind that legislation, has instead seen Fonterra cut its dividend forecast?
Mr Speaker.
Honourable Nathan Guy.
Mr Speaker, right now we're in a very volatile global market. I think the member needs to also remember that last year we had a record payout of $8.40. And right now we're seeing a very volatile global market for a range of reasons. And they are the world is basically awash with milk. We've got milk currently that is displaced from the Russia ban from the EU looking for a new home. And of course we've got some stockpiling in China. So all of those things mean that right now we are in a very volatile dairy market.
Supplementary question, right, Honourable Winston Peters.
What can he say to Waikato farmer Dave Robinson, who said the other day, I quote, I don't believe what Fonterra are saying anymore. The company is not owned by farmers. It's totally lost touch, end of quotes.
Nathan Guy.
Well, I would disagree with those comments. That farmer has a process to talk through that to the top table. There's a shareholders' council representing farmers. They have a direct linkage to the board of directors. The board of directors are currently on a roadshow addressing all of these concerns with farmers. And I'm hearing a wide range of views that farmers are expressing to the board of directors, and that's the appropriate mechanism for them to do that.
Supplementary question, right, Honourable Winston Peters.
How does he respond to Waikato University Professor of Agribusiness, Jacqueline Roweth, saying farmers, and I quote her, are questioning whether Fonterra is actually operating as a cooperative anymore, and that's dire, that's abysmal, end of quotes.
Honourable Nathan Guy.
Well, Mr Speaker, that's a question that should be addressed to Fonterra.
Order. Supplementary question, the Honourable Damien O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Does the Minister consider that the Dairy Industry Restructuring Act passed by himself has indeed achieved its goal and that of his Prime Minister, that is ultimately to set up tension so that Fonterra will be floated on the stock exchange, as the Prime Minister stated was his preferred option?
I refute the allegation from a member. That is completely wrong.
And besides milk prices, the other hot topic was rail. Labor MP Phil Twyford's questions about Kiwi Rail put to the Minister for State-Owned Enterprises, Todd McClay.
Why wasn't he told by Kiwi Rail's board under the no surprises policy about their proposal to implement dirty diesel on the North Island main trunk line, putting hundreds of jobs and billions of dollars of infrastructure in jeopardy.
The Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr Speaker, I'm informed via the statement KiwiRail put out that there is no decision has been made yet. So what the member is doing is speculating. Mr Speaker, this is a decision and consideration for the KiwiRail board. When they've made a decision, they will signal that to us.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Phil Twyford.
What is his view about the consequences of a proposal that would put at risk billions of dollars worth of electrification infrastructure based on the assumption that if electrification infrastructure is not used, it will have to be removed from the line? And has he told the Minister of Finance about that possibility?
Speaker. The Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr Speaker, the Government's commitment to KiwiRail is clear. Since 2008, we've invested $1.3 billion in this. When one considers the amount that was spent by the previous Labor Government to buy KiwiRail, and they spent too much of it, more than $2 billion has been spent. Mr Speaker, we expect KiwiRail to run their business efficiently, and I think taxpayers have a right to expect that KiwiRail will consider the very best way to deliver service in that environment.
Supplementary question, Phil Twyford.
How does dirty diesel on the main trunk line square with his government's commitment to reduce carbon emissions in the transport sector at a time when every other country is trying to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels and increase electrification in the transport system?
Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr Speaker, I repeat again, no decision has been made. I expect KiwiRail to assess all of the options, including environmentally, firstly. Secondly, Mr Speaker, I think this government's commitment to renewables is beyond question. Almost 80% of electricity generated in New Zealand is renewable. I expect KiwiRail to, on behalf of the taxpayer, run their business efficiently, effectively, and that's what we're waiting for them to do.
Order. Supplementary question, Phil Twyford.
Why is he allowing KiwiRail to buy cheap Chinese diesel locomotives when the last lot of cheap Chinese electric locomotives have spent months in the workshop laid up with mechanical problems, asbestos contamination, and the cheap Chinese rolling stock has had equally disastrous consequences?
Mr Speaker.
Order. Honourable Todd McClay.
Mr Speaker, the government, on behalf of the New Zealand taxpayer, has invested $1.3 billion into KiwiRail since 2008. It's 2008. I don't think anything they're doing is cheap.
Minister for State-Owned Enterprises, Todd McClay.
Thanks, Rhys. Now it's time for the Mystery Voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery Voice.
I have to admit, over the years, I've admired his charm and his humour, but I have never admired his vituperative attack on people as opposed to policy. And what will be a great test now is, does he have it in him to be able to be collaborative and constructive?
Who is the mystery voice and what is he talking about? Here it is again.
I have to admit, over the years, I've admired his charm and his humour, but I have never admired his vituperative attack on people as opposed to policy. And what will be a great test now is, does he have it in him to be able to be collaborative and constructive?
I'll be back with the identity of the mystery voice later in the program, after we hear this report from Rhys Lyon about a break from the usual hostilities in the chamber.
There was a rare example of cross-party cooperation when it came to the committee stage debate of the Animal Welfare Amendment Bill on Tuesday, when Primary Industries Minister Nathan Guy acknowledged the contribution of Green List MP Mojo Mathers and her proposed amendment in an SOP, or Supplementary Order Paper, prohibiting the use of animals in testing of cosmetics.
On the table in my name is SOP number 69. We believe that this amendment still captures the essence of what Mojo Mathers was trying to achieve with her SOP of number 44. I had a very good chat to Mojo Mathers this morning and explained the government's decision for introducing a government SOP, and I know that she is broadly supportive of the introduction of my SOP. This amendment sends a very important message that New Zealanders care about their animals, and testing of this nature is unacceptable.
Ms. Mathers welcomed the move.
I'd just like to say express my deep appreciation to the government for stepping up and basically adopting a ban on the animal testing of cosmetics. Having compounded on this for a very long time, and only found out about it this morning, it is, I think, a real win for animals in New Zealand.
Ms. Mathers did, however, say the passing of the legislation was only a start.
And it's all very well on paper to have a law that sounds good on paper or reads well, but at the end of the day, monitoring and enforcement that's really going to count, and that is going to require more funding, more resourcing and more proactive enforcement.
Green MP Mojo Mathers. And later, the Minister's amendments were accepted on a voice vote, and the overall bill was reported back, ready for its final reading.
Thanks, Rhys. And following on from Rhys's earlier report from the committee rooms about the issue of nuclear disarmament, there was this move in the Chamber on Wednesday from Labour's spokesman on disarmament, Phil Goff.
A point of order, the Honourable Phil Goff.
Mr. Speaker, I seek the leave of the House to move without notice and without debate a motion relating to the forthcoming non-proliferation treaty review conference asking the nuclear states
order.
To meet their commitments.
Order. I'll just put the leave. Leave is sought. Is there any objection to that course of action being followed? The Honourable Phil Goff.
Mr. Speaker, I move that this House urge nuclear weapons states at this year's Nuclear Non-Proliferation Review Conference in New York in April to fulfil their side of the bargain they struck 45 years ago in signing a treaty to eliminate their nuclear weapons in exchange for other nations not proliferating nuclear weapons, and calls on them now act to honour their unequivocal undertaking to disarm under Article 6 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
The question is that the motion be agreed to. Those of that opinion will say aye. To the contrary, no. The ayes have it.
Now once more, here's the mystery voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery Voice.
I have to admit, over the years I've admired his charm and his humour, but I have never admired his vituperative attack on people as opposed to policy. And what will be a great test now is, does he have it in him to be able to be collaborative and constructive?
And that's Todd Mueller, elected last year to represent National in the Bay of Plenty. He was speaking in Wednesday's general debate, and no prizes for guessing his topic.
So I do have to acknowledge Winston Peters. I've known him for 26 years. He came to Waikato University when I was a young fella to set up the Young Nationals branch. We had 600 people there. I have to admit, over the years, I've admired his charm and his humour, but I have never admired his vituperative attack on people as opposed to policy. And what will be a great test now is, does he have it in him to be able to be collaborative and constructive? Or does the opposition, destructive, rock-throwing, negative Winston Peters going to be the man that represents them for the next 18 months?
And it's only fair that Winston Peters should have the final word.
Boo!
New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters. And you can find lots more information and a podcast of this program on our webpage, Parliament Today, or one word, .co.nz. I'm Hinea Ahu, and I'll be back with Tom Fruin and Rhys Lyon and another report from Parliament at the same time next week.